we are holding on Lamed Aleph on the base, four lines from the bottom. Lamed Aleph on the base, four lines.
Lamed Aleph on the bottom. Four lines on the bottom.
Yeah. Talking about the dinim of mezuzah. We've been talking about the dinim of how to write mezuzahs, so now more dinim about how to write them and later on how to put them up. I saw Rabuna, what he did with his mezuzahs was as follows. He would roll it from the direction of Echad towards the direction of Shema. In other words, if you imagine that... the mezuzah is written, if you imagine that on the first line, it says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, then he would start rolling at the Echad end and roll it towards the Shema.
From left to right.
The idea being that this way, if you unroll it, then you're unrolling it in the direction in which you'd read it. You'd unroll first the right end. First, you'd unroll the right end, which is the end you start reading on. Yeah. So you roll it from Echad towards Shema. Yeah. So this way, in other words, when you open it up, then you're starting to read from Shema. As you unroll it, you're able to read more of the line. And also for Osir Parshia Seastuma, it's another thing Rav Kalbo says, I saw about Rav Huna's mezuzahs, that he would make the parashiyas of it stumas. Now, you have the mezuzah consists of two parashiyas, Shema and Bahaya and Shemaya. So, what we're saying is that he would make the parashiyas, the break between them, of stumas. Now, you have one of the Rishonim, the Rid, who says that what it means stuma over here doesn't mean stuma like we usually think of, but rather it means he left no space between them at all, because he held, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, since Shema and Bahaya and Shemaya aren't right next to each other in the Torah, one's in Parashat Bayis and one's in Parashat Yekev, then he held there's no need for a space between them at all. Most of the Rishonim don't understand it that way. They understand it in the straightforward sense. It means that you have to make the Parashat between them a Stuma, he said.
Stuma meaning what?
Okay, so now is a good time to talk about the various kinds of Stufa and Stuma. So.
Are they separate from each other?
So now what it is like this. There's one way to make a psucha. You have a machlokes between the Rambam and the Rosh. What is a psucha and what is a stuma? You have one kind of arrangement, which is a psucha according to everybody, which is arrangement number one. When you have the line ends with a space of at least nine letters wide, and then you begin at the beginning of the next line. That's a psucha according to everybody. That's number one. That would be a psucha according to everybody. That's example number one. When you have a space in between, you have a space of at least nine letters between the end of one paragraph and the beginning of the next, and it's all on one line, that's a stuma, according to everybody.
The second one.
Then you have a number of different ways. You have the next five ways are various ones, which are the machlokes between the Rambam and the Rosh, whether they're a stuma or a psucha. The third, fourth, and fifth ones are stuma according to the Rambam, and psucha according to the Rosh. And the sixth and seventh are the other way around. The Rambam would consider them stumas when you have one complete blank line in between, and the Rosh would consider those two stumas.
So the
halacha is that ideally you try to follow both. Therefore, in our present day Sifrei Torah, we only do the first and second ones, which is according to everybody. That way you're yoyser according to everybody. If you have no choice, it says in Shulchan Aruch, then you should follow the Rambam. Now, when it comes, you also have, by the way, number eight over here is something that Tosfos mentioned in connection with the sugya over here. Tosfos mentioned something called a sezura, where you have one line ending at a certain point, and then you have blanks from there to the end of the line, and then an equal amount of blank space at the beginning of the next line. And Tosfos calls that sezura. You have the Achronim discuss, is that another type of sukha? Is it another type of sezura? Or another type of stuma? Anyway, it's not really relevant for our purposes. The point is, I just put it in for completeness' sake, the point is, so when it comes to Sifrei Torah, we try to follow everybody. We try to use only number one for a psucha and only number two for a stoma. The problem is in a mezuzah, when our Gemara is saying that Rav Huna would make the parashah of the mezuzah a stoma, so the problem is, the post can say, and Tosfos discusses it over here actually to begin with, the problem is, Vahoyah and Shemaya is supposed to begin on a new line. So therefore, how are you going to make it can't be a stoma according to everybody, because the only way to make it according to everybody would be number two, and there it begins on the same line. So therefore, you have a lot of discussion how exactly to do it.
All these examples, we're not talking about parashiyos that are in separate sparring.
No. The point is... Of course it's in the same sefer,
but it's
in the different parasha. It's a different parasha, but it's also in the sefer dvarim. That doesn't matter. The point is, we're saying over here, Rav Huna would make a parasha break between Shema and Bahoyim Shemaya in the mezuzah. He would make it a stuma. So how do we make it a stuma according to everybody? You can't do a coin to number two, which is the only way a coin to everybody. Therefore, for lack of anything better, what we do is we follow one of the other methods. What we do is we do something similar to number three with a mezuzah, or number four. Because that, the only way to do that would be to have Bahayim Shemaya begin on the same line as Shema Em. And we don't do that. We start Bahayim Shemaya on a new line in the mezuzah. So therefore, it means that we have to use number three or number four, and that's how we do it. We leave a bit of a space at the end of the parasha of Shema, and then we leave a bit of a space at the beginning of Bahayim Shemaya, so either number three or either number three or number four, and that way, and that way, it's a struma according to the Rambam. It's a struma according to the Rosh, but you don't have a choice. Okay, so that's what we're saying. So
we have to leave a space when the Torah doesn't leave a space.
There is a space in the Torah at the end of the parasha of Shema. There is a space in the Torah before the beginning of Vahoyim Shemaya. There is. It's in the Torah. Vahoyim Shemaya is a parashat Truma. It begins on the same line as the end of the previous paragraph. In a Sefer Torah, you have the end of the previous paragraph, a space, and then the beginning of Vahoyim Shemaya. In a mezuzah, you can't do that, because in a mezuzah, you start Vahoyim Shemaya on a new line. Therefore, the only way to do it and make it a Truma would be to follow one of the methods that the Rambam says is a valid Truma. So what we do in practice is we leave some space at the end of Shema, and we leave some space at the beginning of Vahoyim Shemaya, and that constitutes a struma according to the Rambam. Layout number three or number four. Okay, so now let's go back to the Gemara. Okay. Mason, Gemara says, I have a contradiction. So you're telling me that the parasha break in a mezuzah is supposed to be a struma. But Omer of Shem ben Elazar, Reb Meir hoya kosal duchsustus, Reb Meir would write a mezuzah on duchsustus, which is the one of the layers of the skin of an animal. We'll talk about that and the other ones later, what exactly duchsustus is. Anyway, Reb Meir would write his mezuzah on duchsustus. Yeah, we had a term for it. Kamin daf, he would make it like a page, meaning Rashi describes, and it means, in other words, like a column in a Sefer Torah, long and narrow. V'oita revach milamayla, also he would leave a space on top of the mezuzah before starting the writing. He would leave a margin. V'revach milamata, and he would leave a margin on the bottom, below the last line of writing. And here is the key thing. He would make the parasha of the parasha break of the mezuzah a psucha. So that's a contradiction. Reb Huna is doing it stuma, and we're saying Reb Meir would make it psucha. Psucha, well, again, psucha somehow or other. I mean, if you're starting Vahoyim Shemaya on a new line, the most straightforward way to do it would be layout number one, which is a psucha according to everybody. You finish the parasha of Shema someplace in the middle of the line. You leave a break of at least nine. You leave a break of at least nine letters, and then you start Vahoyim Shemaya on the next line. That would be a psucha according to everybody. So we're saying Reb Meir would do that. So we're saying Reb Meir would do that. So in that case, then that's a contradiction. Then how is Reb Huna saying that the proper thing to do is to make a stoma? And the Braisa continues a marti loy. So Reb Shimon Elazar says to Reb Meir, Rebbe, Matam, why are you making it a parasha psucha? Given that in the Sefer Torah, the parasha of Vahoyim Shemaya begins at a parasha psucha, you have a break in the middle of the line before it. Omeli, and he says to me, Hoyovain smuchas mena Torah, because it doesn't really matter. They're not next to each other in the Torah anyway, because one's in parasha Rosh Hashanah and one's in parasha Eitev. So therefore, you can make it a psucha and there's no issue with it. Therefore, there's no problem of making a different type of parasha break than it is in the Sefer Torah. The answer is that you can go ahead and make it a smucha.
Why?
Because it's not smuchas min haTorah, so therefore the type of space doesn't matter. So he would make it a psucha, maybe, so that it'll be a psucha according to everybody, I don't know. And the Omer of Hananel, Omer Rav, Halacha Kirib Shimon Elazar, and then we're saying, and Hananel says in the name of Rav, Halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, meaning, in other words, on the face of it, my lav a psucha. Now, don't we mean, when we say that Halacha is like him, aren't we talking about the fact that the parasha there should be a psucha? But then how is Reb Huna making it a stuma? Let's say number one, which is a psucha according to everybody. The point remains that Reb Meir is making it a psucha according to whichever opinion of psucha you accept. And Reb Huna, we're saying, made it a stuma. So you have a contradiction. If we're saying the halacha is like Reb Shimon Elazar's report of what Reb Meir did, that means that it should be a psucha, so why are you making it a stuma? By the way, I should mention, Tosfos brings up the point, why are you saying Parshi Yoseha, which implies if Parshi is in the plural, you only have one break between the paragraphs. But Tosfos answers because the fact is you only have two paragraphs and you have one break between them. So you can't really talk about the Parshi Yos being Sofos or Sumas, because you only have one break between them. So Tosfos answers because you have all, because,
even if one break.
But there's one break, is the point. So you can't call it Parshiyas Seif Sukkot. The first one you can't logically call Sukkot. It begins at the beginning of the mezuzah. There's nothing before. You can't call it Sukkot or Stoma. It's not really relevant. The Tosfos answers because it says Ala Oref, but that's Amaba on the last line, and you don't have anything else on that line. The Marshal and the Tshuva brings a few different explanations. What on earth does Tosfos mean by that? And he has a long discussion in the Tshuva of what exactly Tosfos means by that. Anyway. Okay.
The result is
you have a few different explanations of what Tosfos means by that. One possibility is, we were talking at the end yesterday, the question of whether the words Al Ha'aretz go at the beginning of the line or at the end of the line. If we say they go at the end of the line, then that means that amounts to, according to the Rambam anyway, that amounts to a parasha struma. So it's not really a parasha because you don't actually have a parasha break before the words Al Ha'aretz, but in that sense it can be thought of as looking like a parasha struma. Okay, that's one of his answers. Anyway, the point is, again, so again, back to you. So Rav Shimon Elazar is saying that it's supposed to be Tzucha. Rav Huna is saying it's supposed to be Stuma. So then you have a Stira. The answer is Loi. No, that's not when we say the halachas like Rav Shimon Elazar, we're not referring to the type of parasha break. Azrevach, we're talking about the halacha is like him regarding the fact that you have to have a margin, that you have to have blank parchment at the top of the mezuzah and at the bottom of the mezuzah. That we're saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar. Not necessarily are we saying the halacha is like him as far as the type of parasha break. And that's how Rav Huna can be making the parasha struma, which again is how we do it nowadays. So again, given that we can't make it a struma according to everybody, which is number two, because we don't start Vahayim Shamaya in the middle of the line, then the only choice is to make it a struma according to the Rambam, which is number three or number four.
That's because you can start at the beginning of the line.
Because according to the Rambam's basic idea is, if you begin a new paragraph at the beginning of the line, then it's called a parasha struma. If you begin in the middle of a line, that's called a parashat struma. The Rosh takes kind of the opposite viewpoint of it, which is why most of the things that the Rambam considers a struma, the Rosh considers a stucha, and vice versa.
But it's always depending on where you begin.
According to the Rambam, it depends on where you begin. According to the Rosh, it depends on how much space, on what kind of space there is between one and the next. Okay. Anyway, so when we're saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, that you have to have a margin at the top of the mezuzah and at the bottom, the kama revach, so how much space do you need to have? Amr of Menashe Vayakov, Amr lo Amr of Shmuel Vayakov, kimloi atva d'sifri. You need to have the amount of space that's taken up by the paperclip that Sofrim used. The type of paperclip they used in those days, and like in the ones nowadays made out of metal, Rashi describes it as they would take a piece of wood, they'd make a notch in the end of it, and they'd use that sort of like a clothespin to hold down the parchment while they're writing on it so it doesn't curl or whatever. So therefore, and they had a standard size for these things, so therefore that's the amount you need of margin on the top and the bottom of the mezuzah. So the poskim give an amount for it, they say it's equivalent to half the width of a thumbnail. Half the width of a thumbnail. They also say that nowadays we're not necessarily masked on that because nowadays we don't use that type. Nowadays, Sofrim don't use that type of clothespin, that type of thing, so to hold down the parchment. Therefore, it's not as important. You do have to have a minimum amount of space in order that the letters on the top and the bottom should be mukaf gil, because we learned the other day that all letters have to be surrounded by blank parchment, but you don't need more than that. So nowadays, if you look at mezuzahs, they generally have a fairly narrow margin on top and on bottom. Choice discusses what about on the sides?
However
big the parchment is, but it can be a tiny amount as long as there's enough. It's not a big amount. Yeah. Choice talks about what about on the side and says that maybe the idea is the same way as with a Sefer Torah. You have to have a margin at the end long enough to wind around the entire Sefer Torah. Hello. Maybe the same thing would be true as far as mezuzah. However, you have other Rishonim and Achronim talk about it and say not necessarily on the grounds that after all, you have to write Shin Dalad Yud on the outside of the mezuzah. If you have a complete blank winding a parchment enough to go around the whole thing, where are you going to write that? So the amount of margin that you have on the mezuzah is less, on the side is less than that. Okay. So anyway, the bottom line is, we don't have a contradiction between Rav Shimon Elazar, what he says Rav Meir did, and Rav Huna, because not necessarily. When we say the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, we mean as far as the fact that you have to have a margin on the top and bottom of the mezuzah. Not necessarily what the power should break between Shema and Bahayim and Shema'el.
So what is
Therefore, we can say that Rav Huna made them stumas, and therefore we can go according to that. Okay, so the question is, what were you even thinking that you were asking that on the face of it, when Rav says the halacha is a Rav Shimon Elazar, you thought it meant regarding the question of Suchas or Sumas, and the answer is no. It means as far as the margin on top and on bottom. How can you possibly think otherwise that Rav might not have been talking? How can you possibly think otherwise that Rav might not have been talking about that space on top and on bottom? Well, Rav Islay Minhoga, we know that Rav holds of the importance of Minhag, as we're going to see, and as we're going to say later, the Minhag is in fact to leave that amount of space. So obviously, therefore, Rav was saying the halacha is like the criminal law, he must have been referring to that. And, I got that wrong. What it is like this. How can you think that Rav was talking about Sukkot or Sumas when the Minhag has developed, I missed that line of the Gemara. The Minhag nowadays has developed to do Sumas, like Ravona did. Rav holds of the importance of Minhag, so therefore, obviously, he can't possibly be saying that the halacha would be like a Shimon Elazar to make it Sukkot against the common Minhag. Therefore, for that reason alone, we have to say that when Rav said, well, Rav was a generation before Rav Huna, fine, but the point is, even in Rav's time already, the Minhag was already developing to do Sumas, so therefore, that's how it has to be. You can't possibly say when Rav said the halacha is like a criminal law that he meant anything else other than the margin. Now, Rav Islam in Hoga, or Idna no Galma Bistumas. And nowadays, the minhag of the Velt is to make the break between Shema and Bahayim and Shemaya to be a parish of Stumas. And now, how do we know, where do we see that Rav holds of the importance of minhag? The Omer Rava, Omer Rav Tahana, Omer Rav. Now, you have like this. The next thing we're going to talk about is as far as Chalitza. Chalitza, we know, you have the Yavama takes the shoe off the Yavama's foot. Now, you had two types of shoes. They had two types of footwear that they had in those days. There's a minol and a sandal. A minol is a shoe, similar to our present-day shoes. A sandal is a sandal. What exactly a sandal looks like in terms of halacha is a bit of discussion among the Rishonim. But anyway, the Gemara discusses in Yevamos, and that we have it briefly, we're going to have it over here also, that the problem with using a shoe is that you might end up, you're using a ripped shoe where it doesn't cover most of the foot, and then it would be possible for chalitza. So therefore, you shouldn't be using a shoe for chalitza. Better you should be using a sandal. So now,
because what?
Because a sandal, if it rips, then for sure you're not going to use it. Nobody's going to ever wear it. Right. If somebody were to bring a ripped shoe to Beis Din for chalitza, they might not realize that it's too badly ripped to be considered a valid minol, and then you're going to have a possible chalitza. As opposed to a sandal, nobody's ever going to use a sandal that's broken like that anyway, so there's not going to be an issue. So therefore, the Omer Rav, Omer of Kahana, Omer Rav, im Yavai Eliyahu, even if Eliyahu Anavi were to come, the Yomer Chilson Beminol, if he were to say you can do Chalitza with a shoe, fine, Shoyimoy, we can listen to him, we can accept what he's saying, because fine, the fact that you can't use a shoe, it's not because you're not allowed to, it's the Chachamim said it's not a good idea, because you might not be able to tell between one that's ripped and one that's not. But, Ein Chilson Beshandal, but if Eliyahu comes and says you may not do Chalitza with a sandal, Ein Shoyimoy, we will not pay attention to what he says, even though it's Eliyahu Anavi, even though it's no less than Eliyahu Anavi. Shekvan Noago on the sandal, because the people already have a minhag to use a sandal. And therefore, so Rav, we see that Rav holds to the importance of minhag, that minhag is so important that even if Eliyahu Anavi tells us the wrong minhag, we're not going to follow him.
That's why we should go like Rav Huna.
Well, that's why, so therefore, we have to say, if Rav said that halacha is like a criminal law, he can't have meant it to contradict the common minhag of making it sumas, which we see Rav Huna followed that common minhag as well. He must be referring to the space. And the Rav Yosef Omer Rav Kahana Omer Rav.
No other opinion for the space?
No.
We said
that Rav Meir would make the space on the top and then the space on the bottom. So if Rav Shimon Elazar is reporting that he did that, the Pashtus, all the Sofim didn't necessarily do that. But we're saying, halacha is like in that you're supposed to have that. Rav Yosef Omer Rav Kahana Omer Rav. Rav Yosef said in the name of Rav Kahana, so first we had Rabba in the name of Rav Kahana in the name of Rav. Now we have Rav Yosef Omer Rav Kahana Omer Rav, a slightly different version. Im Yovei Eliyahu V'yama Ein Chilson B'minol Shemai. Fine. If Eliyahu comes and says you're not allowed to do Chalitza with a shoe, then fine, we'll listen to him because we don't do Chalitza with shoes anyway. Ein chilkin the sandal ain't shaming loy. But if he were to come and say we may not do chalitza with a sandal, we wouldn't listen to him. Shekran nago on the sandal, because the people already have a minute to use a sandal. Ve'e amrinan, and when we discuss this in Yuvamus, we say, my benayu, what's the difference between these two versions? Both of them are saying that the belt has a minog to use a sandal. So what's the actual difference between them? The answer is, minog lachatchila, ikhe benayu. The argument between them is, can you use a minog lachatchila? The first version the first version, Rabba's version that says it's a yo comes in as chilton minol, shonin loy. What we're saying is like this, lachatchila, you shouldn't be using a minol. Lachatchila, you should be using a sandal. The Dievin, you use a minnow, then fine. If Eliyahu comes and tells us that you can do it, if Eliyahu comes and tells us you can do it lachatchila, then fine, we'll listen. The second version, right now we're using a minnow, but Dievin. Lachatchila, we use a sandal. If Eliyahu were to come and say it's not just the Dievin, you're allowed to use a minnow lachatchila, then according to Rabba's version, then fine, we would listen to him. According to the second version, we're allowed to use a minnow lachatchila even now. So if Eliyahu comes and tells us that if Eliyahu comes and tells us we can't use a minnow, fine, then okay, we'll listen to him and we'll stop using a minnow. Right now, that's the common practice is to use a sandal, but according to Rabbi Yosef's version, lachatchila, you are allowed to use a minnow as well. Just that the belt fits to use a sandal.
So the
lachatchila is whether you can use a minnow lachatchila. But everybody agrees that a sandal is what the belt uses, and therefore that even if Eliyahu comes and tells us you can't use a sandal, we won't pay attention to him. Because minog was minog mevakel halacha, the concept that's brought in Rishonim. Yeah, so mevakel halacha. Yeah, so because as well we have an example over here. Oh, I know, but of after we're coming down. Okay, so that's an example of that. But yeah, but this idea.
Yeah, also, it has to be a shoe.
Okay, it has to be some kind of leather footwear. The truth is, nowadays you have the Rishonim talk about. Actually, Tosfos mentions it briefly over here. We're not so clear on what the sandals in the times of the Gemara looked like. Therefore, the minhag eventually changed, and the minhag became to use a shoe, which is they have actually a special chalitza shoe, which is made somewhat. It's actually sort of a hybrid. I've seen pictures of them. It's actually sort of like half like our modern day shoes and half like a sandal. But whatever. The point is, in Shulchan Aruch, I talk about the details of how it should be made. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So the point is, we see from that Rab holds of the importance of minhag. Ela lab shema mina Rabba. So obviously, therefore, we have to say, if Rab was saying the halakha is that Yoshim and Elazar, he has to be talking about the fact that you need a margin on top and bottom of the mezuzah. The akiv is a sifri, like we said before, the size of the paperclip. Not as far as the stuk of the stuk. The margin means a blank space. Right? So what it is you have one arrangement which is a sukkah according to both the Rambam and the Rosh. You have one type of struma according to both the Rambam and the Rosh. In our present day Sifrei Torah, we only do one or the other of them in order not to get into a machlokes. If you had no choice back in the old days when the Nafsikon Kurdams or whatever, then the Shulchan Aruch says if you can't do either of these, you can't do the respective sukkah and struma according to everybody, follow the Rambam. So consider these three to be stumas and these two to be psukas, even though the Rosh disagrees. In a mezuzah, because we don't have a choice, that's what we're saying just before you guys came, in a mezuzah, because the minhag eventually developed, start Bahayim Shemaya on a new line, then you can't make it a stumah according to everybody, because that would involve starting it on the same line, like layout number two over here. Therefore, we make it a stumah according to the Rambam, either layout number three or layout number four. We leave some space at the end of Shema, and we leave some space at the beginning of the Hoyer Shema.
What?
That's how we do nowadays in the Zohar.
We doing like
number three or number four?
Not like two,
because that would involve writing the Hoyer Shema beginning on the same line as Shema ends, and we don't do that. Okay.
The only way we do it today is three.
So in a mezuzah, as opposed to in a Sefer Torah, the only time. In a mezuzah, the way we make it is according to number three. Yeah.
And
a little bit of space at the end of Shema, and at least nine letters of space at the beginning of Hayom Shema.
That doesn't take into
account. That's according to the Rambam, because in Shulchan Aruch it says, if you have no choice, you follow the Rambam. So therefore, that's what we do. Okay.
Everybody does that.
Yeah. Okay. El Olav Shema Mino. Everybody agrees with that. El Olav Shema Mino Arema. So obviously, when Rav is saying the halacha is like a Shema Mino, you must be talking only about the margins on top and on bottom. Good Shema Mino, that's it. Okay, Rav Nachman says, here's another way of looking at it. mitzvah la'asayt in stuma. The proper way to do the mitzvah is, after all, to do them stuma. The e'av din of stucha is shaper jami. If you make them stucha, then it's also okay. Umay stucha to fa'amar of Shimon Elazar. So when Shimon Elazar says that a mayor would make it stucha, he doesn't mean that he would always make it stucha. Ask stucha. It means Rav Meir would make it also, would sometimes make it stuma. Sometimes stuma, sometimes stuma. When possible, Rav Meir would, I guess it depended on the size of the parchment he had available to him for a mezuzah. If he was able to make it a stuma, he would make it a stuma, because that's the ideal way to make it. If not, then we're saying Rav Meir would make it a stuma. But therefore, it's no contradiction between what Rav Huna did and what Rav is saying, that the minhag is making stuma, and the fact that we're saying that Rav Meir would make them stuma. Because even Rav Meir, according to this, would only make them stuma when he didn't have a choice. Okay. The Gemara says, Lema Messiah. Okay, can we say that this that we're saying, that the proper way to make them stuma is supported by the following brach? So the Braisa starts by mentioning the idea that close the door, please. Yeah. Okay, so the Braisa that we're going to quote over here, we're only quoting the second half of it. The first half of it talks about cases where you have Tashmishik Dusha that you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to take them from one purpose and use them for a different purpose. Here, the exact thing is that, what are we saying over here? Yeah. Okay, anyway. Fine. Kayosebo, similar to this idea of not reusing things for this. Sefer Torah Shabbola, if a Sefer Torah wore out, and you can't use it as a Sefer Torah anymore, or Tefillin Shabbola, or if you have Tefillin that got worn out, Ein oisin mehen mezuzah. You're not allowed to make out of them a mezuzah. Lefisha ein meridin mekdusha chamora lekdusha kala. Because you're not allowed to take something down from a higher level of kedusha to a lower level of kedusha. And the point is, a mezuzah has less kedusha than a sefer Torah or tefillin. So now, if we're saying that hypothetically you could have taken the respective kashrus from a sefer Torah and making them into a mezuzah, now let's consider in the Torah. The end of Parashat Shema is, after Parashat Shema, you have a Parashat Shema. The next paragraph usually begins on the same line as Shema. With Vahoyed Shemaya, it begins on the same line as the previous paragraph. It's also a Shema. So at the end of Shema, at the beginning of Vahoyed Shemaya, you have Shema. So you have, in other words, there's a space in the middle of the line, at the end of Shema, and at the end, and before Vahoyed Shemaya, in a Sefer Torah. So now, ha meridin oisin. So the implication is, if you were allowed to take something down from a higher kedusha to a lower kedusha, then oisin, it sounds like you would be able to. Now, if you're going to tell me that Rav Shimon Elazar is telling us before that the proper way to write a mezuzah is with the parish of stucha in between, then you have a problem. You wouldn't be able to do that anyway. On the face of it, if we were to understand it that way, we would say in the Sefer Torah it's Parashat Truma, after Shema and before Vahayim Shemaya, both of them are Parashat Truma. In the Mezuzah, you're saying you would think that Rav Shimon Elazar meant that you have to write him Sukkot until we had Rav Nachman telling us that no, it means you should write him Sukkot, but you could write him Sukkot if you need to. So therefore, obviously, the fact that hypothetically you could make them out of a Sefer Torah, except for the problem of taking it down from a higher to a lower kedusha, shows that the parasha in a mezuzah should be written as a stuma. No, as a stuma, meaning again, ideally according to method number two, or method number three, because the fact that we're saying that hypothetically you could have taken the respective parashias from a Sefer Torah and make them into a mezuzah implies that the spacing is the same, a parasha stuma. You have, by the way, a good deal of discussion over the fact, I mean, how is that going to work anyway? You have Shema is in Vos Kanan, Vahoyev Shemaya is in Ekev, the two of them are nowhere near each other in the Torah. How would you be able to get them from a Sefer Torah to use them for a mezuzah anyway? So you have a number of different possibilities that Mephoshim talk about. One possibility is maybe you would hypothetically be able to cut them out from the respective places in this worn-out Sefer Torah and sew them together. Maybe you would have, for example, Tosfos discusses over here that maybe you would have, let's say, one of them was written close to the bottom of the column or close to the top of the column, and you write the other one in the blank space above or below it that used to be the margin of the Sefer Torah. Another possibility that some of the Mephoshim bring up is imagine you have a Sefer Torah that's written with very, very, very long columns, So imagine you have a Sefer Torah where Shema is written at the end of one column. Then you have the next column has the whole rest of Hanan and most of Esav, all the way down to Vahoyim Shemaya. So therefore, they happen to be next to each other in adjacent columns in the Sefer Torah, and therefore you can check. It's very odd that it would happen, but it could conceivably happen.
Normally, how many columns separate?
In a normal Sefer Torah, there's a few columns. I don't know, four or five columns, I guess.
Bad in a lot of places.
Well, that's what we're saying, except you can't do that because the Yusha of the Sefer Torah is higher than the Yusha of the Mezuzah. What we're saying, all we're saying is you can't do it because of that, but if it weren't for that, hypothetically you could do it. So that's what we're getting into this discussion. Well, practically speaking, no, because how are you gonna take a Mezuzah and turn it into a Sefer Torah? You're not gonna attach one whole parasha from Mezuzah into a Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah is made up of sheets of parchment. Yeah, of course. Well, that's neither here nor there. That don't
happen. Sefer Torah once is possible for a lot of reasons. You still can have considered going to the balance.
Right. It's interesting because actually the Taz talks about in one place in Aruch Chaim that if you have a choice between using for Shmishei Kedusha for a lower level of Kedusha or not using them at all, better you should use them for a lower level of Kedusha rather than have to put them in Shemus. So they ask on him, what about our Gemara? One of the many answers that Achronim give on it is there's a difference between Shmishei Kedusha, like for example a mantle of a Sefer Torah or a Parashas or what have you, versus the actual object of Kedusha itself, like a Sefer Torah. Anyway, so again, the point is that on the face of it, the fact that the spacing between the parashiyas and the Sefer Torah is Truma, after Shema and before Vahoyim Shemaya, shows that therefore it has to be the same in a Mezuzah. Otherwise, you couldn't even hypothetically make one into the other. The answer to the Gemara says not necessarily, because Dilma Lahashlin, because you could argue that maybe you could say what the Braita means, that you would have theoretically been able to do it, except you can't, because Ein Meridin, Mekdusha Chamura, would be talking about, let's say, to finish it off. So imagine you have, let's say, the Parasha of Shema was written at the bottom of a column of a Sefer Torah. Below that, you have a margin, a fourth verse, as we learned the other day. So hypothetically, you would cut that part of the Sefer Torah out, the wound Sefer Torah out, and write Vahoyim Shemaya in those fourth verse space on the bottom. Which is not written on. So hypothetically, you could do that, but you're not allowed to because of Kedusha Chamura and Kriya Kala. Doesn't necessarily show that the spacing in the Sefer Torah is the same as the spacing in the Mezuzah.
So it's one of the not written Sefer Torah, and you think that those
bits are sewn into Mezuzah. No, we're talking about, imagine that the parasha of Shema ends over here, and then you have a margin, you have a blank space below it. So hypothetically, you could cut this out, write Vahoyim Shemaya in that space over there, and you have yourself a Mezuzah. But you can't do that because it's Kedusha Chamura and Kedusha Kala.
Even though
the Sefer Torah is possible.
Just
the fact that it was used from a Sefer Torah gives it a Kedusha higher than a Mezuzah.
So you
bring up a good point. The Rid, one of the Rishonim, the Rid wants to say that actually Tefillin have a higher Kedusha than Mezuzah or Sefer Torah. He says on the grounds that a Sefer Torah goes in the Aron, a Mezuzah goes on your door, Tefillin go on your actual head. So he argues you would be allowed to take a piece of a Sefer Torah and use it for Tefillin, because he argues that the Kedusha of Tefillin is higher than that of a Sefer Torah. I don't think most of the other parts
are.
Yeah, okay, but that's neither here nor there. It's Tefillin you use every day. Sefer Torah you don't. No, I mean, that's the reason. I don't think the rest of the parts can hold like it now. All right. Okay. Next. Okay, so now let's go to the next thing. So far our conclusion is you can't necessarily prove from this braisa that the layout of parashiyas in a mezuzah is the same as the layout in a Sefer Torah, because we're not necessarily talking about where both Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya were already written in the Sefer Torah and you're cutting them out and making a mezuzah out of them. We could be talking about only Shema was written at the bottom of a column. You're cutting that out together with the margin below it, writing Vahoyim Shemaya over there, and then of course you'd be able to write it however you want, so for a summa. So the halacha may well be that it's supposed to be similar, but we can't prove it from this right. Okay, now let's consider another thing. So now we have to talk about, we mentioned before that Rav Shimon Elazar says that Rav Meir would write his mezuzah on duchsus. So we have to talk about there's three different types of parchment. You have to take the skin off the animal and you tan it and make parchment out of it. You can have one of three possibilities. You can leave it unsplit, so you have the full thickness of it. That's called gvil. Then you can split it into two layers, I guess in modern terms, I guess they'd be the dermis, the epidermis, I don't know. And one of those layers is called clasp, and the other layer is called duct. Yeah, okay, whatever, fine. So one second. So now, as we're going to say now, Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah, Halacha, L'Moshe Mitzrayim, each of them is written on a different type of parchment. But now, if we're talking about, hypothetically, a Sefer Torah being taken and used for a mezuzah, how is that going to work if they're supposed to be on different types of skins? So again, you're going to tell me if you were allowed to take down the thing in Kedusha, you would be allowed to. How? V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, halachal emosh mishkidai, tefillin ala klas, tefillin are supposed to be written on klas, or mezuzah al duchsus, and the mezuzah is supposed to be written on duchsus. Klaf b'mokim boso duchsus b'mokim fair. Klaf you're supposed to write on the flesh side. Duchsus you're supposed to write on the hair side. So you have a machlokes rishonim. You have a machlokes rishonim. Which one is which? Most of the rishonim hold that klaf is the outer layer and duchsus is the inner layer. So they understand, therefore, that what it means is klaf you write on the flesh side, meaning in other words, if you split the two layers apart, if you imagine, for example, if this is a gill, if this is an unsplit parchment, and you split it like this, so let's
where
say
is
this,
the cow?
The cow is let's say over here.
Yeah.
The cow is let's say over here. So here you have, so most of the Shonim understand, klaf is the outer layer, further away from the flesh, duchsus is the inner layer, and so therefore they understand that when it says klaf you write on the flesh side, it means over here. Duchsus, you write on the hair side, meaning over here. In other words, you write on the place that was originally attached to the other layer. You have a tshuva of the Rambam where he says the other way around. The klaf is the inner layer, and duchsus is the outer layer. And according to him, therefore, what it means is klaf you write on the inside of it, the side that was attached to the flesh, and duchsus you write on the outer layer where the hair was. We don't do like that. We follow the version of most. No, so what it is actually you have two different versions that you can find in manuscript, in Kitzvei Yad, in Yad HaChazaka, you can find different versions. The common printed versions have it the way most of the Rishonim have it. You can find some of the editions nowadays that are based on Yevonite and whatever. Yeah, that supports the tradition against most of the other Rishonim, right.
And the Rambam basically is almost the only Rishon that goes...
Who holds like that, right. Rashi, I don't know if he addresses it specifically. There's also a Gemara in Shabbos. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he just said yes. Anyway, so on the face of it, therefore, so a Sefer Torah has to be written on Zvil, a Mezuzah has to be written on Duchsus. So how is it even hypothetically possible to take a piece of a Sefer Torah and use it as a Mezuzah? By the way, the poskim also talk about nowadays the way they make skin, the way they make parchment is not quite the same way as they made it in the times of the Gemara. They don't actually split it into two layers. What they do is they scrape off a little bit on the outside and a lot more on the inside. Therefore, the halacha is it has the din of klaf. It has the din of klaf, even though it's not the entire outer layer, it's most of it.
It's not
real, it's klaf. And actually, the Rambam discusses, you have a lot of discussion among Rishonim, when we're saying over here, say, Sefer Torah has to be written on Zvil, the Rambam learns doesn't mean it has to be written on Zvil, actually. He learns that Sefer Torah could be written on klaf as well. Just all it means is that it cannot be written on duchsus. Similarly, duchsus, according to most Rishonim, means the inner layer, and according to the Rambam, it means the outer layer. Mezuzah is mezuzah. So again, the Rambam learns that what it means is basically, you can't write a mezuzah on tefil, you can't write a Sefer Torah on duchsus, but you can write any of them on klaf. And that's how we do nowadays, that Sefer Torah and tefillin and mezuzah are all written on klaf.
So
the other parts are wasted, I guess, yeah.
The klaf is,
again, according to most poskim, the outer layer of the skin.
But the klaf,
but again, it's not quite the whole outer layer of the skin. What?
It's not quite almost like real
because a lot is scraped off from the inside enough that it can't be considered duchsus anymore.
Yeah. Did anyone try
to
use the
I have no idea. I have no idea. Okay. Anyway, so again, the question is, the Gemara's question therefore is if a Sefer Torah has to be written on Zvil and a Mezuzah has to be written on duchsus, and there's no way to turn one into the other, so naturally you can't use a piece of a Sefer Torah as a Mezuzah, so what's the Braita talking about? The answer is l'mitzvah. That's only the proper way of doing the mitzvah, but if you were to write, for example, If you write one on a different kind of skin, then it's not a problem. So the question is, Vatanya Shina Pasul. We learn in a Braita, if you did any different, then it would be Pasul. The answer is the Tefillin. That refers only to Tefillin. Tefillin have to be written on cloth. They can't be written on Zil. They can't be written on Dukhsasil. But the Tefillin, and a Mezuzah, you have options over there. Again, as the Rambam says, any of them can be written on cloth. So according to the Rambam, it comes out, Mezuzah can be written on cloth or Dukhsasil. Tefillin only on cloth. And a Sefer Torah on Zil or cloth. So all three of them can be written on cloth. I don't know if everybody agrees to that, but that's how the Rambam holds, and that's how we do nowadays. All of them are written on cloth.
And of course, it really doesn't matter which wrong version of the Rambam you're
talking also true, about right.
When you make that.
Well, not really, no, because if you hold, according to the version of the Rambam, that in his Tshuva, that cloth is the inner layer that comes out, we're not writing on cloth, it comes out, we're writing on Rukh. Then you would have a problem.
Yeah, but what you said didn't specify, so your statement would have been true either way.
Yeah, okay.
However, you know, knowing that we know now what we're doing,
the deepest layer.
The deepest layer, that, according to most Toskim, is what's called Dukhsasil, so facing the flesh. Facing the muscle, the flesh, or whatever. Tosfos, in fact, in some places, talks about why is it called Dukhsasil. Tosfos says, Duch is the Aramaic word for place, like Dukhta, and Sustus, in various places, Tosfos says, is Greek, or Median, or some other language, for flesh. So Dukhsasil means the part of the part of the skin that's at the place of the flesh, touching the flesh. Yeah. Okay.
And the
grill is the whole unsplit thing. Yeah.
And the
cloth is, according to most Toskim, is the outer layer.
The
outer layer of the skin.
Of the deepest layer?
The outer layer of the skin of the animal. The outside layer. The layer that's closer to the head. Okay. Yeah, of course. Well, they don't actually shave it off. What they do is they put it in a solution of lime or some other thing that's like that dissolves the hair and then pulls it out. But Okay. So the question is, Valtanya Shina Ben Bezer or Ben Bezer Pasul, but we have another Braita that says if you change in this one or that one is Pasul, so now we can't say it's talking about Tefillin anymore. The pastor said it has to be talking about a Mezuzah or a Sefer Torah. The answer is Idi with Tefillin. No, when it says Ben Bezer, it means both of them are referring to Tefillin. Because Vahad Kasbina are cloth for Bakum Seir, one thing means if you were to write Tefillin on cloth, which you have to write them on cloth, but you were to write on the hair side of the cloth, instead of we said you're supposed to write on the flesh side of the cloth, then you would have a problem. Vahad Kasbina are Duchsus for Bakum Basil. The other one that would be possible would be if you wrote them on Duchsus on the flesh side, because we said Tefillin are not supposed to be written on Duchsus at all.
They have to be written
Dafka on cloth, and cloth, we said you have to write Dafka on the hair side. So again, according to most of the Rishonim, what that means is, you have to write on the flesh side of the cloth. So according to most of the Rishonim, again, it means that you write on the place where you separate it from the other layer. And according to the Rambam, it would mean that you write it, according to the Rambam, cloth would be the inner layer, and it would mean that you'd write, according to the Rambam, cloth would be according to the Rambam, flat would be the inner layer, and you would write on the inside of that, again, the side of the clothes.
According to the
other person, flat would be this, further away from the flesh. If you assume that the flesh is here, then according to most of the person, flat is this, which is further away.
Everyone is really getting to divide the skin.
Well, if you divide it, then you have cloth and dukhsasil, respectively. Again, nowadays they don't really divide them. They scrape off enough of the inside that it's not considered dukhsasil anymore. That's considered cloth. Okay.
You mean that it's not considered grill
anymore? That's not considered grill anymore. Okay. Fine. The Iboy is Bema, or another possibility, Shina Bazel Bazet. I know you. This question about when the Braita says you change this or that, you could argue, fine, maybe they're talking about Tefillin versus Mezuzah versus Sefer Torah, but you could say Tanoim, the Machloket Tanoim, and therefore, when we said before that, when we mentioned before the Braita about hypothetically taking a part of a Sefer Torah and turning it into Mezuzah, that could be according to the opinion that you're allowed to write one, that you're allowed to write them on different kinds of skin, whereas then we have another Tana who would say that you have to write each one Dafka on its particular type. Namely, the Tanya, as we learn in a Braita, Shina Bazeo Bazeo Fossil, Rab Acha Machshu Mishum Rab Achoi, Rab Chanina, Rami Lo Bishmeder Rab Akiva, Rab Chanina. So therefore, so you have a Machloka Tanoim, you can say, you have a Machloka Tanoim about whether it's possible, about whether you're allowed to write a Sefer Torah on anything other than Gvil, and a Mezuzah on anything other than Dukhsus. So no contradiction. Okay. How about another one? again, the Braisa before had said, Homeridin Ois. And again, the Braisa had said before that you can't take a piece of the Sefer Torah and use it for a mezuzah because a meridin, implying, but if it weren't for that, you would have been able to do that. So now here's another difference on the face of it between a Sefer Torah and a mezuzah that should prevent you using, that should prevent using one from the other anyway, even if you didn't have the issue of meridin. Because the Havoya Stilchot. Don't you have an issue that a mezuzah requires Stilchot and Tefillin do not? Stilchot is the ruled line. If you look carefully at a Sefer Torah, the next time they take it out to lane, you'll notice that you have lines scored in the parchment in order that the lines on the Sefer Torah should be written straight. Now, a mezuzah does need that. Tefillin do not. And a Sefer Torah is actually machloikas between Rashi and Tosfos, whether it needs or not. Rashi holds that it does. Tosfos holds that it does not. So one explanation is that tefillin are always kept closed up anyway, and you don't even need to check them that often. Therefore, for sure, they don't need stirchot. And a Sefer Torah, fine, if the sofer is expert enough that he can write straight lines without scoring them, the Tosfos discusses over you. You may need scoring on the top. You may need stirchot on the top just because you have a halacha that you're not allowed to write. Yeah, you're not allowed to write words of Torah without doing stirchot. So fine, you do one stirchot on the top, so the top line is straight, and the rest of them will follow it. You do a stirchot on each side and one at the bottom, and that would be enough for a Sefer Torah, according to Tosfos. Whereas a mezuzah, you're not going to have each line has to have stirchot. So our Sefer Torah have stirchot on every line because, what? They have on the sides also, yes, it's a mark off the margin, I think so.
Is one of the explanations that a Sefer who writes Sefer Torah is a mumka more than a...
That could very well be, yeah. I don't know if that's... It could be.
Therefore, yeah.
It could be. I don't know. Be that as it may, anyway, according to Tosfos, the Sefer Torah doesn't technically require stirchot. However, it could happen. I mean, if a Sefer can't write straight lines without that, then sure, he needs stirchot. Lamaisa, all Sefer Torah that I've seen nowadays have stirchot because this way the Sefer makes sure that it'll come out nice and... Tefillin don't technically, although again, they usually... they could be wavy, although a killer they're supposed to be straight. But if a Sefer knows how to make them straight without that, then Tefillin technically don't require stirchot, again, just on top and on bottom and the side. Lamaisa, all Tefillin that I've seen nowadays also have stirchot for the same reason. Okay. Anyway,
they're going to be doing it already.
But in principle, though, a mezuzah requires stirchot, a tefillin do not. So what are we talking about, how hypothetically you could have taken a parasha from tefillin and used it for a mezuzah, except for the kedusha chamura, kedusha kala problem, if the one for tefillin didn't have stirchot, and the mezuzah requires it. Any mezuzah that does not have stirchot is possible. And then that was Rav Manyumi Bachilki had said that in the name of Rav Chama Bar Guria, who said it in the name of Rav. Then Rav Manyumi Bachilki Yedidei Omar, and he himself, on his own authority, said also, this mezuzah requires Sirtur Chol Halacha Moshe Messina. So again, how could you conceivably take a parasha of Tefillin, which wasn't necessarily written with Sirtur, and use it for a mezuzah, which a mezuzah requires Sirtur? The answer is again, Hano. So again, Tosfos says, in theory, we could be answering that the Tefillin were written with Stirchot, but since you're not required to write them with Stirchot, Tosfos brings an idea that we find in different other places in Halacha. Kol she'eni mechuyev b'davar v'oseihu, anybody who's not required to do something and does it anyway, nikra hedyot. It's called a hedyot. So therefore, like, you're not gonna normally do Stirchot with Tefillin, unless you need to do it to normally. Well, the head, meaning like a simple person. Like he's not doing necessarily the right thing. And we're coming up to Sukkot now, by the way. We Lubavitchers sit in the Sukkot even if it's raining, even though in Shulchan Aruch says technically you don't need to. And you have there's a number of Siddim and a number of Rebbeim who not all Rebbeim, but other branches of Siddus have said on that. So what? Okay, I'll be called a head. I'm still gonna do the mitzvah.
To make a book.
Yes. We make a bracha also. Okay. Anyway, so the answer is again.
You write Tefillin without stirchot while you're doing that?
Or? No. Okay. So the answer is again tanoihi. The answer again is the machloek of tanoi. Whether mezuzahs need stirchot or not. The tanya, as we learn in a bracha, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Omer Meshum Rabbeinu in this case means Rav. Tefillin and mezuzahs nichtavet shaloi min haktav. Tefillin and mezuzahs, you don't have to write them from a pre-written thing. When you write a Sefer Torah, for example, you have to have another Sefer Torah or a Tikkun Torah in front of you or something so you don't make a mistake. Tefillin and mezuzahs he's saying you don't have to do that because everybody's familiar with the word. And they don't require stirchers. So therefore, according to that, it would have been possible to take a parasha from Tefillin and use it as a mezuzah, except for the ein murid mezuzah chamur l'mezuzah kalah. The hilchta, the halacha is partly like him and partly not. Tefillin like boy stirter. It's true that tefillin don't require stirter, but mezuzah boy stirter. The mezuzah does require stirter. Again, one reason is because tefillin are checked much less often than a mezuzah. Now, we nowadays have the minhag to check tefillin twice in 7 years, just like mezuzah. Technically, only mezuzah has to be checked that often. Technically, I think we're going to learn it later in the parish. Technically, tefillin don't need to be checked that often. As long as the bias is intact, you assume that the parashiyas inside are still in good shape, as opposed to a mezuzah is attached to the wall, attached to the door, and eventually to the doorpost, and eventually you have humidity, it gets cold, it gets hot, or whatever, so therefore you have to check it more often. So therefore there's an idea that therefore mezuzah has to be written in straighter lines than tefillin.
Okay.
Therefore requires it. Ba'aydi nechtav et shalom in achtav. Both tefillin and mezuzahs can be written without a written text in front of the cipher. My timer. Why is that nigrach written? Because the text of it is familiar to everybody. Everybody knows the wording of Shema and Bahayim and Shema. Meaning you don't have to have a sample in front of you to copy. Obviously it's better if you do, so you don't make a mistake, but you're not required to up your own. Okay. Now another din as far as Sifrei Torah. Omer of Chelvoi. I guess the reason why we're bringing this in is because before we had Rav Chelbe reporting about Rav Huna's mezuzahs, and now we're going to have another thing that Rav Chelbe reports what Rav Huna did. I saw Rav Huna to have a Yosef Akuya to Sefer Torah. Like he wanted to sit on a bed or a couch where there was a Sefer Torah on there. He didn't want to sit on there while the Sefer Torah is on there. Therefore, Bekas Lekada Ahara, so he took a jug or a barrel and overturned it on the ground to make a stand. And he put the Sefer Torah on top of that, and only then would he sit on that bed. After the Sefer Torah was on top of the drawer, not on the same bed where he was going to sit on.
He removed it.
Because he holds also Leishiv, Agabi Mitzah, Shesefer Torah Munachaleh. He holds that you're not allowed to sit on a bed or a chair or whatever where a Sefer Torah is placed on it.
Well, the month was taken off.
Yeah, that's the thing. So he took it off and put it on something else, and then he was allowed to sit on that bed. That's what it was. Yeah, then he was like, once the Sefer Torah is off, sure. Upliga de Rabba Baba Chana. Now this, though, disagrees with what Rabba Baba Chana says. The Amr Rabba Baba Chana Amr Yechanan, Mutter Leishav Agave Mitzah Sefer Torah Monochaleh. You're allowed to sit on a bed next to a Sefer Torah. The Imlochach Adam Loimah. Now somebody might whisper to you. What is that? What's the difference? Different Torah and Mechablan Torah. The Imlochach.
Sefer Torah is coming anyway.
Well, it's Mechama, you're dying to drop off.
It's the desire.
I don't know. Divrei Torah and Mekablan Torah. There's a concept of fine. So Divrei Torah are not Mekablan Torah. Finish. I mean, you have two. You have a minhag, for example, that's brought in Shulchan Aruch that women, when they're nidda, don't touch the Sefer Torah. Fine. Okay. So maybe then you could argue. What? Right. I mean, no. I've never heard of men who are Bali Keri avoiding touching the Sefer Torah. Fine. Okay. Anyway. The im lochshach adam leimer. Now, somebody might whisper to you and say it can't be like that because ma'aseh of Elazar shayu yoshev al hamita. It happened once to Rabbi Elazar that he was sitting on a bed. The nizka shesefer Torah munach aleha. He remembered that a sefer Torah was lying on the same bed.
One time.
The nishmat, and he immediately slid off the bed. The yoshev al gabei karka, and he went and sat on the ground. The joima kamishay kishay nachash, and he acted like startled. He acted like shocked. As if he had been bitten by a snake. So the chorda, you have a proof from that you're not allowed to sit on a bed where a Sefer Torah is on. The answer is there, the Sefer Torah wasn't on the bed itself. Hossam Sefer Torah agave karka. In that case, the Sefer Torah was on the floor. So therefore, he was very disturbed that the Sefer Torah should be on the floor and he should sit on the bed. But Rabbi Yechanan is saying it's not a problem if the Sefer Torah is on the same bed as you. Some of the Mephoshim explain, for example, the Chedushim HaMiyuchas Marashba, doesn't literally mean it was on the floor. After all, we said it was on the bed. What it means is, in other words, the bed has higher and lower parts. It means it was on a lower part of the bed, and he realized all of a sudden I'm sitting on the higher part of the bed, and therefore he immediately got off and sat down on the floor. Yeah, beds have higher and lower parts. Yeah, sometimes they have, depending on how the bed is constructed.
Once the bed, the next of it on the bed, you took it off.
Yeah, of course. Because it's not there. Yeah, no. If you have it, if the bet is reserved usually for the Sefer Torah, maybe that's different. We're not talking about that. Now, who is the now? You're asking who the halacha is, right? Tosfos wants to say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yishma, that you're allowed to sit on a bed with the Sefer Torah. And Tosfos says, for one thing is, first of all, Tosfos says usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yishma, even against Rav, how much more so against Rav Huna. Second of all, Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Moed Katan that says that when Rav Huna passed away, they wanted to put a Sefer Torah on his coffin, on his mitzvah, and his Talmidim said, and his Talmidim wanted to do that, and Rav Chista said he can't do that. He held while he was alive that you're not allowed to sit on a bed where a Sefer Torah is on, so it wouldn't be Derech Eretz to do the same after he passed away, when he implying though the fact that Talmidim wanted to do it implies that it's the right thing to do. So therefore, Tosfos says Halacha must be like a Yid. However, most of the other Rishonim hold that no, the halacha is like Rav Huna, you're not allowed to sit on a bed where a Sefer Torah is on it, or a bench, or a chair, or whatever. So therefore, the halacha is like Rav Huna, that you're not allowed to. And the Ravid says, if it's at least a tefa higher, then you're allowed to. It should be higher than that, but as long as it's at least a tefa higher than Bidiyevit, then Bidiyevit is okay. And they talk about also, you have similar dinim as far as other Sforim as well, that you shouldn't be sitting on a bench or whatever. What's the difference? The point is it's still on the same, it's still resting
right,
on the same.
So it's not that some people
no, there doesn't have doubt on that.
Doesn't
at all.
Help
like you. That, no. Okay.
Game don't work.
Okay.
Game don't work.
Yeah. Okay.
What if there's two chairs, like the bench is upstairs, and there's one cushion next to you that it's on, but your cushion...
So actually, the Shevet HaLevi, now that you ask about that, I actually saw when I was preparing that the Shevet HaLevi brings about that,
good.
And he says in that case it's not a problem. Each of them is considered a separate chair.
Okay.
Well, you have a bunch of chairs that are connected to each other by the new benches upstairs. You have a bunch of individual seats connected together.
But yours is no good, even though there's 12, 14.
Right, because it's all...
If I put it on the 14, you guys have to stand up.
Now getting back to Dinim and Mezuzah. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kosva Igeret, if you write the Mezuzah like a letter, Sula, then it's Kosva. What does it mean like a letter? The Rashi says it means two things. Number one, you didn't write it with Sirtur, so you didn't score these lines to make to write the line straight. And number two, you also didn't write it with Dikta. You weren't careful about Chaseiros, the Yaseiros, you weren't careful about the spelling of which words are Mole, which words are Choser. Tosfos argues that it can't mean the first one, Sirtur, because we already discussed that before. Tosfos argues it means as far as Chaseiros V'Yaseiros, if you're only. So then it would be Kosher. My time, and now why is that? So not Sirtur, we already discussed before. My time, ask you Ksiva Ksiva Misefer, because you learn by Zeta Shava from a Sefer Torah, where it says, by Mezuzah, or Chsavtama Mezuzah, or not a Sefer Torah, rather, from a Get, the Chosav Lost Sefer Christus. So therefore, just like a get has to be written with attention to the spelling, so does so just like a get has to be written with attention to the spelling, and so and parasha and soja and whatever, so also a mezuzah has to as well. Okay. The Amud of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So now we're going to start talking about the dinim of putting up a mezuzah. Till now we've been talking about the various dinim of writing a mezuzah, now we start with the dinim of putting it up. The Amud of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Tla b'makil, if you hang the mezuzah on a stick, and then let's say you put that stick next to the doorpost, or you attach it to the doorpost afterwards, so, my time of b'shal rechavayin, and because the mezuzah has to be davka on your gate, so not on a stick which is next to the gate, it has to actually be attached to the doorpost. It has to be attached to the doorpost. We're going to talk about later if it was attached beforehand, and then you put the mezuzah on it, versus afterwards. We'll get to that later. We learn similarly in Ebraica. If you put the mezuzah hanging on a stick, or if you put it behind the door, meaning not in the doorway, but behind it, then there's a danger in it, and there's no mitzvah. How is there a danger? So Rashi says it's a danger because the mezuzah protects it. Okay, so Rashi understands, achore adelas means, in other words, if, let's say, for example, if this is the doorway over here, you're supposed to put it inside the doorway, on the doorpost, in the doorway. If instead you were to put it, according to Rashi, you were to put it on the wall next to the door, then it would be then we're saying sakana ve'im b'mitzvah. Yeah, Tostes discusses a bit differently. Tostes says that what it means is that you put it, we're going to say later, you're supposed to put it towards the, close the door, please. You're supposed to put it towards the outside of the doorpost. If instead you put it further in the doorpost, Tostes learns what it is that, so Rashi says the sakana is because the mezuzah is supposed to protect you from aziki. If you don't put it in the right place, then it's not protecting you from aziki. Tostes says the sakana is you might bump your head against it because you don't realize that it's there. Tostes learns basically that you're supposed Tostes actually learns similar to Rashi, that it means, in other words, you put it on the wall because you're walking by, you don't pay attention that it's there and you bump your head. As opposed to when it's properly in the doorway, sure, you might also bump your head against it, but since you're doing the mitzvah, then the Eidusha will protect you. Well, that too, also, but also, yeah. Okay. So based Munvaz HaMelech, however, people from the household of Munvaz HaMelech, they would do like that when they were staying over in an inn, meaning this that was saying you're not supposed to put the mezuzah on a stick and put it next to the door, they would do that when they were staying over in an inn. The meaning, in other words, now they're a royal family. They're never staying in one place for very long. They're traveling from place to place. In the next parak, when we talk more about the dinim of mezuzah, we're going to talk about that the person is temporarily in a place for less than 30 days. He's parted from mezuzah. So these people are based Munvaz HaMelech. They're always on the move. They're never in any one place for long enough to be chayev in mezuzah. As a zecher from mezuzah, they would put the mezuzah on a stick and put it next to the door. Okay, because they weren't required in mezuzah anyway. And also, so it's just that, that's the point, therefore. So now, therefore, there's no problem, there's no sakana of it, because since they're only having it there temporarily, then there's no issue that they're going to bump their head. Okay. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, mitzvah lahanicha v'seh chalola shel Pesach. The mitzvah is to place the mezuzah inside the open space of the doorway, meaning it was on the actual doorpost, in the doorway. Of course, the Torah says you have to put it b'sharecha. The answer is stop that a minute. Yes, but if you didn't have that, you would think like this. You would think like this. Rava says later on in the Sugya that the proper place to put the mezuzah is in the tefach of the thickness of the doorpost that is closest to the Shutter Rabbim. So therefore, you would think Hamad de Merachis Mali. He would think the further. Way you put it from the house, the better it is, so therefore put it all the way on the outside wall of the house, next to the doorpost. Kamash Malon, and that's what we're saying, that no. You have to put it back in the doorway. By the way, this is what we're saying before about if you put it after Adelis, if you put it behind the doorway, we're saying Sakana Va'im B'Mitzvah, you sometimes see people that do that. The reason is because you have, when we're saying about your Ein B'Mitzvah, the Rambam understands it means it's actually no good. The only place to put it, says the Rambam, is in the thickness of the doorway, and if not, if you put it behind it, on the wall next to it, it will be completely possible. You have a number of other Rishonim who learn. Ein B'Mitzvah just means it's not the ideal way to do the mitzvah. But for example, if you have no choice, and for example, in Shulchan Aruch, it gives an example, if let's say you live in a house where the outside door faces towards the suite of Goyim, and if you put the mezuzah on the doorpost, they're going to rip it off, then you're allowed to put it on the inside next to the doorway. And that's how you...
Within the thickness of the doorway, you have to put it close to the...
So we just said, it has to be the tefach of some of the Shulchan Aruch. It's supposed to be within the tefach of the thickness of the doorway that's closest to the Shulchan Aruch.
You could have a very big...
You could have, for example, a very wide doorway, and you put the mezuzah on the part closest to it.
I guess you don't have a tefach.
If it's less than a tefach wide, fine, you just put it wherever it'll fit.
But closer to the Shulchan Aruch.
Well, yeah.
One of them is the Shulchan Aruch. Halala Shel Pesach. Is that a door opens up? Where's the
Chalola Shel Pesach? So Chalola Shel Pesach would be, you have two walls like this and a thing on top of it. So Chalola Shel Pesach would be over here, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
Here, this is the door.
Yeah. On the actual drawer. On the actual drawer. So again, you can't do that. So that's the point. If you can't do it, so most doorposts are made wider than the door. Most doorposts are made wide enough that you have part of the doorpost where the door doesn't bang in. If you don't have a choice, if the doorpost is exactly as wide as the door, or any of the other things, then yeah, you put it next. Right, then you put it next to it, like we're saying. Okay. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Kosta al Shnei Datin, if you wrote the mezuzah on two columns, so you wrote half the mezuzah in one column and then continued in the next column, Sula, then it's possible. have a contradiction. A braisa says, kof val shnei dapin, v'inicha v'shnei tipin, if you write the mezuzah on two columns, and you put it on two, and you put it on two doorposts, sula, then it's possible. Implying a hub. If you wrote the mezuzah, the braisa is saying that if you wrote it in two columns, and you put it on two doorposts, like let's say you, so Rashi learns that we're talking about, that you have the mezuzah was to begin with written on two columns, Tosfos says that it doesn't just mean two columns, it means two separate sheets of parchment. Anyway, the Braisa is saying, when is it possible? If you put one of them on one doorpost and the other one on the other doorpost, then it would be possible. Implying Hobbistatha. Implying Hobbistatha from Cheddar. Implying if you put them all on one doorpost, then it's good, even if it's two columns. The answer is Re'uya, the Shnei Tipin column. Okay, but we don't mean that you actually put it on two doorposts as possible. If it's able to be put on two doorposts, according to Rashi, what we mean is, since it was written in two columns, it's possible to cut it up into two pieces and put one on one doorpost and the other on the other doorpost. That would be possible. If it wasn't written like that, if it was written in such a way, if it's written in one column, would you be good? According to Tosfos, what it is only if you write it on two separate sheets of parchment, where as it is right now, you could conceivably take one and put it on one doorpost, and the other on the other, only then would it be possible. But according to Tosfos, if you were to write it two columns on one sheet of parchment, then it would be okay.
Two columns on
one sheet of parchment.
One
here and one here, one next to the other. You write, yeah, with spaces, and on the columns of the paper, yeah. Okay. So that's what it is then. So the Rambam Paskin is similar to Tosfos, that if you write it in two columns, it's okay, as long as it's not on two separate sheets of parchment. Sure, a mezuzah on two separate sheets of parchment would be possible, but Rambam learns even if they're sewn together.
Okay.
Two columns is okay, two sheets is not.
So I can't go out.
Yeah.
How do I just, you go in, have no door, but it's a wall like this, there you see?
Uh-huh.
It has no arch at all.
Okay, so
what it's...
Okay, so what it says, in Shulchan Aruch is like this, basically. If the vertical sides of the arch are at least 10 tefachim wide before it starts curving, then that door requires a mezuzah. 10 tefachim high, yeah.
There's no door.
Hold on. If there's no door, that actually depends on, in a few lines, but now since it's almost night of time, I guess, well, we have a couple of minutes. I guess let's see what we can do, and we'll see if we have time to talk about doors. I understand what you're saying. It's a door. It's an entrance way where there's no doors. Yeah. So let's go. But Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the mezuzah holech acha hetes tzir. When it comes to which side you should place the mezuzah on, now you're supposed to place it on the right side. What you do is you follow heker tzir. You follow which side the tzir is on. So my heker tzir, Amar of Aga, Avaksa. The tzir is the Avaksa. The Avaksa is the hinge. In those times, though, they didn't use hinges like we use nowadays. The type of hinge that they had a door pivoting on was more like what you call in English a pivot. They'd have a hole drilled into the threshold, another hole drilled into the frame of the door, into the lintel of the door, and you'd have pegs that go into them that hold the door in place.
The pegs go in the door.
One end of the peg goes into the door, and the other end goes into the hole in the floor, or the hole in the lintel, as the case may be. So the side that has that is the side that's considered the most important side, and therefore that's the side you put the mezuzah on. So the Gemara says, hey, Kidomi, what kind of scenario are we talking about? When do you go according to the Heker Tzir? For example, the door between two parts of the house, for example, between the men's quarters and the women's quarters. So Rashi described, you might divide your house, you have one part for the men, because you have people coming and going all the time, then you have a different part set aside for the women, so like, for example, so his wife can work in private. There's a door between one part and another, so that door, that kind of door, is the kind of thing that we're talking about you have to go according to Heker Tzir, because how are you going to determine which side is the more important side? Are you going from the men's side to the women's side, or are you going from the women's side to the men's side? So that's when you use Heker Tzir. According to Rashi, you go according to whichever side has the hinge.
Only if it's ambiguous.
Now, according to Rashi, it would have to be, we have to be talking about specifically that both of these rooms have ways to go out independently. You could go from the men's side out into the street, or you could go from the women's side out into the street. According to Rashi, and according to many of the other Rishonim, and post him. If you have, for example, a room where the only way to get into it is through an outer room, then they say we don't go according to Hecker's theory. Then you go according to the outer room is considered the more important room, and therefore you would determine right based on that. However, we have Minhag Chabad is that we always go with interior doors. We always go according to Hecker's theory.
Within what?
With interior doors, with all doors inside the house. The doors that lead out to the street, we go according to the right side as you're coming into the house. But all other doors inside the house, all other doors that don't lead out into the street, we always go according to Hecker's theory.
Minhag Chabad.
And you have it. So what you do is whichever side the hinge is on, that's going to be the side where the door opens into that room. The room that the door opens into is considered the more important room. Therefore, you put the mezuzah on the right side leading into that room.
The hinge is on the left side.
Doesn't matter. The point is, let's say, for example, with that door over there. That door, the door upstairs. Don't open it because it's noisy enough as it is, but you can see, you can see that the hinges are on our side. The hinges in that case are on the, well, they're on the left side coming into this room.
No. Before you go out of the shul, the
mezuzah
is on the right side.
So what you do, again.
No, that's coming in.
Be on the left side.
Again, because, no. What you're doing is, again, you follow the side that the hinges are on. The doors over there, the second set of doors to go into shul, not the front doors, but the doors after that, open toward the foyer. They open away from the shul. Therefore, the foyer is considered more important than the shul. Now, the velt wouldn't hold that way. The velt would hold the foyer. The shul is more important. Because you're going through the foyer to get to the shul. We hold based on a tradition going back to the Rebbe Maharash that as the Rebbe refers to it in a number of letters that Rabbi Yaakov Landau told him the Rebbe Rashab did this, that we go according to whichever side the hinges are on is considered the more important room. Therefore, we put the mezuzah in that for example with that door over there. Since the hinges are on our side, the door opens towards the inside. Therefore, this room is considered more important than that stairwell over there, and therefore we put the mezuzah on the right side going into this room.
Basically, you're saying we put the mezuzah on the side of where the door opens in.
No, you put the mezuzah, you find which room the door opens into. Whichever room the door opens into, you go on the right side going in that direction. That is how you do it. On the right side, going in that direction.
The door over there.
When you're going upstairs, but the door opens towards you. Therefore, you don't go according to going upstairs. Instead, you go according to coming from that stairwell in here. Because since the door opens in here, that's considered the more important side. Because the hinges are on this side, and the door opens into here. If the hinges were made the other way around, if the hinges were made that it opens into the stairwell, then we would put the mezuzah on the other side. We'd put the mezuzah on the right side going into the stairwell. That is Minhag Chabad.
If the door was opening into the stairway,
then we would put the mezuzah on the right side as we're going into the stairway.
Okay, where the door opens.
Where the door opens into is considered the more important room.
Here it opens into the
Cheder Sheni, and therefore the Cheder Sheni is more important than the stairwell. But again, for example, with the front doors of the shul over here, you have not the front door to the street, the front door to the street or to the area where we do Kiddush Levana or whatever, but the front doors from the foyer into the shul. Those doors also open outwards. So therefore, in that sense, the foyer is considered more important than the shul. But that's what it is because the doors open in that direction because the hinges are on the outside in the foyer. Therefore, the foyer is more important than the shul, and therefore we put the mezuzah on the right side as you're leaving the shul to go out into the foyer. Again, the belt would not hold like that. The belt holds, according to what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that you only use Hecker's theory where both rooms independently go to the outside. But Minhag Chabad is that we always use Hecker's theory for interior doors.
The belt holds by the
hinges side? The belt holds by the more important versus less important room, unless they're equally important, and then you go according to the hinges. We hold according to the hinges regardless.